Yo, I've been getting a lot of questions. Stu, where's the vlog been? I haven't seen a lot of vlog action out of you throughout the pandemic and COVID. What's going on? Listen, I put the vlog on a temporary hiatus. A, because remember, guys, I'm a fucking gym owner too. I've got gym owner COVID pandemic shit to deal with as well. And, we started dialing in a little bit more on the podcast. Instagram content has been fucking going strong, but mainly because we've been adding a ton of courses to Micro Gym University. For those of you guys who don't know, I started an online school specifically for micro gym owners about 2 years ago. Those eight master courses that are inside of Micro Gym University have been getting revamped, new content added to them. And now we're going to be going ahead and opening up enrollment again for anyone interested in Micro Gym University. If you currently see what happened with the pandemic and it poked holes in your business, not just fucking maybe your operational capacity or like how well you clean, but like literally it showed you flaws and openings in your business you know you need to correct, shoot me a DM on Instagram. Let me know you're interested in Micro Gym University, and you and me will go back and forth in some audio messages, and I'll let you know whether I think it'd be a good fit for you. I'll answer any questions you have, and then I'll hit you with a promo code to get you started. Guys, enjoy the rest of the podcast and have a great fucking day. Alrighty, guys, what is up? It is Stu. It is What the Fuck Gym Talk. And I've got my good friend Rachel Brenke with Fit Legally. I've had her on the podcast before, and we jammed on things trademark related, a bunch of other stuff. I'll put the link to that podcast down below. But Rach, for anyone who maybe did not get a chance to listen to that one, give them the quick elevator pitch as the who the fuck you are and why it matters in the context of this podcast today.
Who the fuck I am. So yes, I run Fit Legally, which is the legal resource for fitness business professionals. So CrossFit gyms, fitness gyms, yoga, Pilates, you name it, we run the gamut. I am also a licensed business attorney and intellectual property attorney. So I work very heavy in trademark and copyright and protecting the brands of many fitness businesses, as well as the inner workings of contracts, et cetera. As you're going to see through this episode, other ones, and just for knowing Stu, obviously, if I'm on here, I'm not your typical attorney. I definitely feel like I have really great information, but if you're looking for someone with a suit and tie, I am not your gal. I am in ripped jeans and a nose ring right now. So that's what you'll get when you come to Fit Legally, good quality info, but definitely fun spin, which I think will fit well if you follow Stu.
Yeah. This chick, again, if you listen to the last podcast, I mean, everything, I don't have all the accolades listed again, but everything from the gamut of cancer survivor to Iron Man, like Iron Woman, you are Rach is the shit. We got to meet at a speaking engagement we both did a couple years ago out in Seattle. And anyway, it's been great to stay in contact with you. And the conversations I've been having recently around COVID and micro, I'm sure obviously you've been busy. We were talking before hit record, business in the consulting and in the field of law is stayed up. People are having to, in crisis, there those certain niches that are even needed even more. What have you been seeing a lot of concern-wise? We'll start with COVID, and we're not going to spend a ton of time on COVID because I don't know about you. I'm COVID the fuck out as far as.
Fucking tired of COVID.
Oh, over it. But what do what are you seeing on your end? Some of the gyms and fitness facilities you're working with from a legal standpoint, what have been the major woes and headaches that they're having to navigate?
Yeah, so I'll get into the woes and headaches, but I have to say I'm actually really encouraged, and fitness businesses are doing like the best, I think, at adapting to change and digging in and finding out the info. One of my big things is y'all don't know what you don't know, so that's why I'm here to bring it. So I'm just very proud of those listening. If you're sitting and working on your business right now, and also just kind of pivoting during COVID, be proud of yourself for that, because we work in other industries too, and a lot of them are freaking the fuck out and not doing a lot of change, so I'm super proud. But the biggest things that we're seeing from the fitness businesses, obviously because many of it's hands-on, and you're having to deal with the government directives, how many people you can have, cleaning procedures, and all this sort of stuff. One of the big topics, besides complying with whatever your state has put out, which I hope you are, because that'll help you liability-wise, consumer perception-wise, should there ever be an issue. But one of the big ones is like the use of like liability waivers. Our goal is to try to protect ourselves, doing all the cleaning, abiding by what we're supposed to do. But at the end of the day, we still want to try to insulate ourselves from liability. So now is a really good time to stop and do that pulse of, am I fully protected? Do I have the right insurance? Have I set up my business properly? Am I like an LLC or a corporation? And then the third, which is kind of my legal trifecta that I always look at to see if you guys are protected, is contracts. But in the name of COVID, we're really looking at like these liability waivers, which everybody and their fucking brother, even Chuck E. Cheese, well, they're going out of business now, but they're having you sign a liability waiver essentially to get services. And it's not uncommon. So if you're not doing it, it's something I strongly suggest you put into place. And it's just essentially a document. And we do have them at Fit Legally. We have a whole COVID resources page with other podcast articles, resources that you guys can check out. But it's letting the consumer know, hey, we've done all this, but you are assuming the risk of coming into contact with someone or COVID in our facility. And obviously that's not going to alleviate you, the fitness business, from liability if you have an employee that knowingly has COVID or a, you know, that sort of thing. But it is putting the onus a bit more on the consumer, on your athletes that are coming in, to be like, all right, well, I'm going to assume the risk of partaking in this activity during a pandemic, which you would think would be assumed, but as your lawyer, well, not your lawyer, Stu's lawyer, but y'all listening, you know, you would think that's assumed, but that's one more like those protection things that we want to look at if a problem ever should happen.
Yeah. And we got to, you know, we got to be real in this scenario, short of, you know, having an employee who you did not properly screen or you knowingly put people at risk with COVID, it's going to be almost impossible for anyone to say, oh, I got it from there. Right. So it's been funny. I've talked to other insurance companies that work in the fitness space and saying, hey, do the gyms need a COVID waiver? And they're like, nah, you're good. Now, again, you got to also look at the mode of an insurance company saying that information. They don't want to have to pay out any claims, and not saying that is their that's their goal, but it might be, it might be. So having an additional waiver is just one extra layer of security on there, you know, kind of scenario. It honestly to have that language drafted up, and it's not that big of a deal. And you got to think of it like this: you're open, and there's some of these places that are open illegally, technically. And I'm going to speak in North Carolina, we're technically closed. There was the Attorney General for North Carolina did release some exceptions that do allow fitness facilities to operate in this loophole. And I'm fortunate enough to be in that loophole. However, it's a little bloodbath in Charlotte, mm-hmm. North Carolina. Charlotte mm-hmm. is, you know, I'm talking 36 to 50 boutique studios within a 5-mile radius. And I probably 15 to 20 of them dead, like done, you know, and we all know it's due to the biggest expenses, rent. You know, you could furlough all your employees, but if the landlord puts the screws to you, because he has a business to run too, you're in trouble.
Let me kind of give you a little side note on that. It's something I did in my own business for our law firm. We were running, our lease was coming up, and we were fully intending moving elsewhere because COVID definitely showed us. We already worked virtually anyways, like online. So we didn't really need a brick and mortar office. The bar makes us. So we were looking at moving anyhow. And I let the office sit empty, and it's been, what, since March? I mean, our stuff is there. We're not using it. And I emailed our landlord and said, hey, our lease is coming up in a month. I'm going to a place that's $2,200 less per month. I can either leave now and go there, or you can at least take like the $600-$700 for me to stay here. He dropped my rent $2,200 for me to stay, because $700 is better than zero.
It's a renter's market right now.
Yeah.
I'm a landlord. I own my building, and I've got tenants in there, and I gave them all, I was very gracious with rent relief. Like I didn't tack it onto the back of their lease, just gave it to them. Because the other thing you want to think of too, no landlord wants to lose you and then have to lease it out in this new marketplace where the price per square foot is not going to be significantly as high for commercial, you know, commercial mm-hmm. real estate. Now, you said something that was really interesting. I was talking about the bar requires you to have brick and mortar as a lawyer.
Well, for us, it depends on where it is and what purposes. Like for us, if we're going to advertise locally, we can't just have like a hourly space. We have to have an actual brick and mortar, which honestly, I don't really need to do that much advertising, pat myself on the back, but we do a lot of copyright and trademark. So I don't just work locally, you know, actually majority of my clients aren't even locally, but yeah. So for me to be able to still serve local businesses and markets in them, I have to have a brick and mortar, and it can't be like a shared workspace. It has to be its own office.
That's interesting. Is this made you rethink how your business operates? Like, are you like, besides needing the brick and mortar, are you like, honestly, we might stick with this, or would you want to go back to seeing your people in your building?
No, not at all. I mean, honestly, even before, I hardly saw my people because I had already built a primarily virtual law firm by the nature of people being across the U.S. anyways, and just my life circumstances, always training for Ironmans. It's just the flexibility of being able to work from my home. My team loves it. I absolutely, you know, it's funny when all this happened, all these law firms are freaking out when COVID happened. They're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And we're over here like, we didn't even feel a blip because we had already had all the infrastructure in place and all of that. And so even working with many fitness businesses who had to pivot to do, you know, integrating like online lessons or online coaching and that type of stuff, many of them had already started doing it before COVID. So it was a seamless transition. And it was really fun to see those that were forward thinking using technology because this COVID showed us that brick and mortar is not always where it's going to be.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, I definitely don't think brick and mortar is going anywhere in the experience world, but there is now a hybrid variation, right? Because mm-hmm. there was a pool of people that all of us tried to get in. And that was the fat Sallys on the couch who had every excuse in the book. I don't have enough time. I'm intimidated. I'm scared. I'll do it next week, whatever. Well, now they get to add the best excuse ever. It's not safe. I'm actually better off here not getting sick. They have the best excuse in the world. So now you have to translate to this digital fitness thing. And especially, you know, you mentioned it, people, you know, traveling, going for Ironmans. How many of the clients, like if you look at the average micro gym, there's a strong population there that are transient with their work. Maybe they're only in town Monday through Wednesday and they're in New York mm-hmm. Thursday through whatever. It's nice mm-hmm. to have this digital offering that they could slap on a phone or a laptop and take and follow their brand that they like mm-hmm. in home and still have that experience, you know, when they're in the Marriott, you know, in Oregon or wherever they're at.
Agreed. And you're losing people to large companies like Beachbody, because for me, I travel a lot for work when it's not COVID, and I know that I need like a quick 20-minute HIIT workout or whatever. I know Beachbody has that app access. My local gyms don't have that, and so they may lose me and other people simply because of ease of access for that.
Yeah. Previously, brick and mortar gym, you know, if Sally wanted to go to 5:30 p.m., but her kid's t-ball game runs late, she just has to resort to missing the gym that day. Well, now she could get in what I call like good enough, right? Mm-hmm. She could go home and get in that 20-minute express digital workout. It's good enough. And she'll pay that, you know, there's the psychology of subscription-based offers, that $19.99, that $24.95, mm-hmm. that subscription number that happens in our debit account that we don't exactly look at and freak out over every month. They could keep running for months and months and months on end and be like, oh shit, I'm still paying for that. It flies under the radar. Now, on that same token, I do want to take a second. There's been a lot of, you've seen it, the gym owner in New Jersey. I cannot think of this fucking name of that guy. Gyms that are, again, standing behind, you shut me down, it's illegal. Think of Tom Haddon. He's the one who owns Mountainside Fitness out in Arizona. He's the one, you know, suing governors. We had a group of local gym owners in North Carolina try to sue the governor of North Carolina. When you see all that and you look at it, are you like, sure, go ahead and exercise that right, get after it, fellas? Or are you more like, yeah, you're going to spend a lot of money and probably not get as much headway as you thought.
That it's kind of a two-pronged thing. Like I'm all about us standing up for our rights. We don't want to be just blindly shut down. You know, I want to make sure that the right science is there, and I'm not trying to get all political on that, but like, you know, I want to make sure that if my business is going to be shut and I have no other income stream to feed my kids, I need to make sure it's legit and it's not trampling my rights. However, the other side of this, we need to look at it from a public relations perspective, right? I mean, because I'm watching the businesses in my area who I might be a patron of in the future. And if they're not taking safety measures now, I'm not going to trust them anytime, you know? So it's not even just about the rights aspect, but you need to see what your current consumers and your potential consumers believe about your behavior. Now, you know what? You may attract a bunch of people who love that you fought for not having the gym shut down. You also might have the other side, people who won't come to you at all because they're like, oh my God, you want to stay open during a pandemic? You're not cleaning, your staff's not wearing masks, I'm never going there. So the decision for me would be like, is it worth the time and money? And actually with the way things are moving so quickly, at least for us in Virginia where I sit, we've had phases all over the place, and actually is even broken down to which region of Virginia that you go to, what phase that you're in. So things are changing so quickly. I feel like the way the legal system works, you wouldn't even be able to keep up. It'd almost be moot by the time that you even got through the legal system. I'm not saying you shouldn't pursue it. I think it's just one of those cost benefit things you have to look at and see what is it truly going to accomplish in the end.
Yeah. And there is, there's a certain point where, you know, I had a, there's a group of gym owners and I got a phone call. Would you help contribute? I think it was like $500 to $1,500 towards legal fees so we can go and, you know, sue the governor. And I said, no. And, you know, my thing has always been, there is no government involvement in fitness whatsoever. There's absolutely no, like, I always use the salon industry. Like in North Carolina, there's a board of cosmetology. The like the state could walk into any salon at any given time. And if the barbicide, you know, that blue shit the combs go in, isn't at a certain pH level, you get fined. If your employees haven't kept their license up, you could get fined. Sanitation ratings in restaurants. The fitness industry has none of that. I could literally take Rachel right now. We go on a Groupon. I find an online personal trainer cert. And in 40 minutes, Rachel is a certified personal trainer. She opens up a gym and starts training people. And she's a fitness professional. You don't see that in other industries. There's zero regulation in the fitness industry. And I'm not saying I'm pro regulation. I'm just not pro guys. Here's how I picture it. And you can weigh in on this. I picture in 2021, the government getting together and be like, why did we have such a problem with the gyms? Now I know why we kept them closed longer. They're not clean places. They, you know, social distancing. Why do we? And they're like, sir, we don't regulate them at all. They're literally anyone could open a gym at any time and run it exactly how they want with no, okay, put that on the to-do list. Let's get some regulation in the gyms and there'll be a set certification you need to have and a this and a that. That does scare me. And I think about that sometimes. Where are your thoughts?
I'm surprised that we haven't gotten there. I mean, you know, I go to speaking events and fitness conferences and I'll stand in the room and it's business owners. So it's y'all that are owning these facilities. And I'll say, who has insurance? Few hands. Who uses waivers? Very few hands. And I'm like, what the fuck? You're having these people throw out 500 pound dumbbells and all this shit and you're not protecting yourself. I'm really surprised that there's not been more regulation at all. Yeah. At least for, you know, the type of gyms that you have. So yeah, I wouldn't be, we're going to see a lot of unintended benefits, well, not benefits, I guess, consequences coming out of COVID based on people's behavior during it. I mean, I'm fighting bullshit with the kids' school. They want immunizations and they're not even going to school. Like they're sitting in my house and I'm like, you know, so it's almost one of those things. It's like, is it because that's the way it's always been done? The government's always done X, Y, and Z. So they're going to continue doing it. I don't know. We could go down a whole path of that. I agree with you. I guess my big call to those listening is let's do the right thing in this. Let's stick by the government directives, pivot as much as you can. You have the technology, you know, keep working on your business because this shit's not going to last forever. And you don't want to end up with them going, oh, well, should we regulate now? Because y'all ain't going to be happy when that happens.
Yeah. And I do. I get the play. At a certain point, some of these businesses, the back gets up against the wall. And when the money's gone, the money's gone. And you're going to fight. If you put someone, put your back up against the wall, you're going to fight. And I understand that. I think there's some people that are grandstanding with it and using it more as a PR play, you know, kind of scenario. But let's, you know, one of the, so the transition, I've had some interesting conversations of successful gyms. They're like, Stu, you know, my numbers, here's my nest egg. And I'm churning through my nest egg of cash quickly, which it took me a while to get there. And I got to say, man, this whole thing, I was planning to open location number 2 or 4, whatever it was by 2022. And now I'm like, I don't know, dude. I don't know. How else can I expand and scale my brand without having to open up my own corporately owned ones? And that's where we get into the world of licensing and franchising, right? And it's what we call OPM, other people's money. You have an idea, either it's a brand name or a concept or something proprietary, and you go ahead and you either license, which would be like a CrossFit model, Calvin Klein, Walt Disney model, where you here, you use the name, you pay a fee. And that's kind of the end of our transaction. You know, you can, there's upcharges. I had the owner of Board 30 on and they have just the fee for their license, but you can pay extra for geographical protection for someone, you know, if you want to pay an extra $10,000, nobody within 200 miles can get it, whatever it may be. And then there's franchising, which we all, you know, associate with things like Orange Theory and locations like that, where, you know, it costs a high ticket, you know, multiple four doctors have to go in to open the fucking Orange Theory and they hire one sweat equity, they hire one sweat equity trainer to be the manager in there. But they tell you everything, like you can't change the paint on the walls without getting it okayed from corporate. If a gym's here considering scaling their brand, they think they've made something special enough that other people would want to buy their name or their business system, how would you recommend they look at it? And if you could just speak with some operational definitions of the differences between licensing and franchising.
So before we even get into the differences of the two, you have to understand really what you are, quote unquote, selling is your intellectual properties. So it's the name of your business. It's the trade secrets. It's the systems and stuff that you've developed. And we did another episode that Stu will link on trademarks and making sure that you are actually having a brand name that's worth licensing and protected. You've got to go through the whole trademark process. And, you know, I mentioned earlier how I was so proud of all these fitness businesses doing all this improvements on their business during this time. I wasn't just referencing the COVID stuff. I was also referencing a lot of this brand protection. I have worked with so many gyms who are originally CrossFit that are now rebranding away from CrossFit because they're already coming to their own. They already have established audience. You know, they already have a good amount of members. And so what they're wanting to do is develop a new brand, transition a new brand, and protect it by trademarking. And so we've been doing a lot of that. I really, that's one of my favorite things to work with on businesses is like that forward planning and protection. But anyway, so before you get into licensing and franchising, the assets that go into that are intellectual property like trademark, et cetera. So you would need to make sure that if you are planning on whether you go down the path of licensing after I outline it or the path of franchising, you're gonna need to have a marketable business. Not just that it was successful, but marketable and protectable. So if you're using a general name like, I don't know, what's a common name of gyms that we see across the US?
Like an actual brand name or like a naming convention?
There's 15 of the exact same name, but they're not related to each other.
Oh yeah. So, we could use, there's a license called NC Fit out of California. They got 8 locations locally. They got maybe 12 or 15 locations. Now they just went ahead and opened licensing worldwide.
Be licensing. I'm thinking more of like 8 distinct separate. I mean, let's just come up with like ABC Gym.
Sure.
If there are 15 ABC gyms, but they're not actually connected to each other, that's not going to be a protectable name. You're not going to be able to license. You're not going to be able to franchise. So before we even determine which path you want to go to start making OPM with other people's money, you need to make sure you have a protectable name. So it's going to have to be a distinct name, just like yours.
So you're going to have to need, because if someone's going to purchase the rights, either use the name or whatever, you already have to put in all the back work and all the legal fees and the processes to say, yes, you can use this. So before a gym, like, hey, I've got a great thing, I'm going to start licensing. Like, cool, but what are you licensing? You have to actually own it. The government has to recognize you actually own all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do all that. So if you want to reach out to Fit Legally, we'll do like the whole evaluation. And since I have my MBA, I love marketing. We walk through like brand protection, if we need to rebrand, all that good stuff. So now that you guys understand you have to have a protectable, I started there because I don't want to talk about the difference of licensing and franchise and someone go, oh, well, shut the podcast off. I'm going to go do licensing and kind of find out you do all the legwork and you don't have anything to license because it's not a protectable name. So the major difference between the two essentially is that licensing is granting another party, the licensee, the right to use that trademark. It also can be technology or other legal rights, but we're typically thinking about like the trademark name. For example, and you already said it earlier, Walt Disney is a huge person of this. They do reproduce their own products, obviously, but they also vastly license their trademark of Walt Disney and the related marks to other people, such as like McDonald's. Even when McDonald's has Happy Meals and they're selling it with Mickey Mouse in it, that is not a franchise situation. That's a licensing arrangement. So it's essentially giving someone else the permission to utilize your trademark. One of the most classic examples in the fitness industry would be like CrossFit, all right? CrossFit essentially is providing you, well, you're paying for it. They're not providing you shit. You're paying for the right to get to put the recognized brand of CrossFit on your gym because why? Consumers recognize it. They believe it. And immediately they already know what type of business it is. However, CrossFit's not providing any structure. It's not providing any control, which you're going to see when we get into discussion about franchising. So it's simply the right to get to use the term CrossFit. Now,
which is interesting. I'm going to pause there. So it's so funny. Yeah. Right now, CrossFit does have a brand name globally. You could say it, and probably 1 in 10 or better, I would probably say better, have heard of it. It's so funny. Like when I found CrossFit in 2006, they were licensing, you know, leasing, and no one had heard of it. And it didn't come with anything. And you had that early adopters mentality, like you were the first to the gold rush, like, oh, this is so great. So for people listening here, if you're like, again, I'm Urban Movement, I'm a one of one in Charlotte, North Carolina. And besides maybe this audience and my members and people locally, you know, in Charlotte, nobody fucking knows. There's absolutely no brand value there whatsoever. Now, I would
trigger fight to me. When I hear CrossFit, I automatically can visualize correct. What goes into that athletics.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's branding. And with Urban Movement, I mean, in the first 2 years of my business, people came in and thought we were a subsidiary of Urban Outfitters, right? Like, we were like the active fitness wear brand for Urban Outfitters. And I was like, God damn it, I fucked up. But once, so again, if you can't trade on brand, just like CrossFit couldn't trade on brand early, what CrossFit had was a belief in fitness. We believe fitness looks like this. And they had all of the education for you. So like when you look at the value for anyone who's thinking of, I'm going to license, number one, like Rachel said in the beginning, let's say, and I know the example you're looking for earlier, I'm going to use one here, is called Hustle House. If you Google Hustle House, you'll find 50 fucking Hustle Houses by independent solo fucking ventures or LLCs.
Not licensed. They all just created their own.
Correct. And so you can't license that name if you're a successful Hustle House because there's too many fucking versions. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say you have something unique. Let's use me, Urban Movement, and I want to license it. And I'm not licensing the brand, I better have something of value, not even from a legal standpoint, just from to attract people to buy into my thing. I need to have like, we do this specific kind of training. Here's all the science that other guys came up with. Here's how we apply it. And you can learn that and use this name if you believe in it and go and run with it. So guys listening, make sure you're either selling or licensing your franchise based on the brand value, which most of us don't have. It's not global or national even for the most part. Or you're doing it because you also are associated with, like I would call it, a belief in fitness, or you have some system that somebody wants to be a part of. But that's when it gets tricky between the licensing and the franchising.
Yeah, so franchising, you just hit it on the head. The vast difference, licensing is the use of like that brand value, that brand recognition, that brand indicator, like the name of CrossFit. A franchise is often going to include that and also the associated other elements, such as like when you see the colors of the red rooftop in the golden arches, you know exactly what it is. Those are brand elements for McDonald's. And so McDonald's is a big franchise one as well, but they're not just licensing the use of the trademark McDonald's in the color of the brand elements. They also have a degree of control over how, well, I use the term hamburgers loosely, so I apologize if you like McDonald's, but how the food is made, you know, because they want to have a consistent experience for the consumers every time you go to a McDonald's. I know every single time I go to McDonald's, it's going to taste like shit and I'm going to feel like shit afterwards. So that is consistency. But look at it on the CrossFit side of things. CrossFit is simply licensed, and I could go to a CrossFit in Seattle and a CrossFit in Austin and have two completely different experiences. And that's because CrossFit corporate, quote unquote, is not actually, has no degree of control over how the business is actually run, all the systems within it. It's just the name, which, as a side note here, something to think about. If you're sitting here going, all right, I don't really want to sit here and tell someone how to, I don't want all the control. I just simply want to get a trademark, which I can do with Rachel, get a trademark license and give the permissions to someone else, get paid in return. It's not just as simple as that. So you still have to make sure you're exerting some control over how that mark is used. Because if you don't do it, it's something called naked licensing. So if I just said, Stu, I am going to license to you Fit Legally, you go do whatever the fuck you want to do, and I don't have any controls, then that's naked licensing. I could lose my mark, and that's going to lose the brand value. So we're kind of looking at it as a spectrum. We have the trademark that we want to license. We have to have a little control over like how Stu uses the mark. You know, for example, what are some of the things that CrossFit requires of how you utilize it? I know in their licensing affiliate agreement. Go ahead.
Yeah. So like, for example, the and it's evolved over years, but previously it was even where you position it. You could used to be Southend CrossFit. And then at some point they switch that in the affiliate agreement and they call it affiliate versus licensing. Now at CrossFit has to be the first naming convention that also, if you host an event, you're not allowed to call it a CrossFit event. It is an event being sponsored by CrossFit Southend, but it is not a CrossFit event. And I joke around people like you're essentially leasing the name. It's a lease is what it is. There's certain things you got to bring it with a half a tank filled up because they gave it to you with a half a tank. Like it's, you have to return it the way it was given to you and you're not allowed to make modifications to it and do a lot. I mean, there's a lot you're not allowed to do with the name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's because is legally required. When you're the trademark holder and you're licensing out to someone else, you have to have a degree of control of how that mark is used, which kind of makes sense because you want to have the value behind it anyways. And if you're just throwing it out to everyone and everyone can use it however they want, then there's no consistency in the naming convention at least. But then, you know, as we're looking down the spectrum of degree of control, you know, the more that you're requiring that person to what they can and cannot do in the business. For example, you said it earlier, CrossFit doesn't, I don't know if it's before the recording or not, CrossFit doesn't give a shit if you put CrossFit on the outside of the building because you license it and you do freaking yoga on the inside or ballet. They don't care. But if they were an actual franchise, there would be control over what services could or could not be sold. I mean, think of it like the example with McDonald's. You're going to find the exact same menu everywhere because there's franchise control. So I think the big thing to think about is if you're like, all right, I've got a protectable name. I've got my trademark with Rachel. I'm ready to decide if I want to do franchising or licensing. You have to consider which degree of control do you want to have over it. For me, the licensing route, as long as you just put in those specifics in a licensing agreement, just like you said with CrossFit, where CrossFit can be appended, how it's used in advertising, et cetera, that is enough to meet the threshold of control so you don't fall into that naked licensing. Then the other side of it is, do I really want to outline all my systems? And you know what, if you do, this is fantastic, but do I want to have control over the systems, what can and cannot be sold in that person's business when they use my mark? Then franchising's for you. It just really is about how much effort you're wanting to put into it. And there's nothing wrong with actually starting in a licensing type situation. And as you grow and become more confident in your brand value and your legal engagement with your business and growth, you can transition to franchising later on. It's not like an all or nothing that they have to choose now.
It's so interesting because you look at CrossFit, like I said earlier in the beginning, CrossFit didn't have brand awareness. That's mm-hmm. not what people were buying. They really bought into this idea of there was a traditional way of working out. You went into the gym, you did your resistance training, you jumped on the treadmill and you went home.
Oh, you mean my way?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. And so then CrossFit kind of blended this thing. So what people looked at is this is not even the IP that was protected, like their workout style and what I call the belief in fitness that they created. I mean, I can't even tell how many hundreds of articles out there and videos they put out for free, just explaining our position and belief in fitness. That's not the IP they protected. That was out there for free. That's what people bought into. However, when there's not a precedent model and there wasn't like CrossFit location number one that did really, really, really well and then told all the other CrossFit stuff, everyone just kind of figured it the fuck out on their own and the cream rises to the top. Licensing models traditionally are more of a volume-based play where the licensor, myself, if I'm licensing Urban Movements, I know the my profit and my, you know, my success is going to be in how many Urban Movements do I get out there and then whatever. And you have to make that trade-off because franchising is generally more expensive because you have to build in your costs for making sure this is the kind of neons and this is the neon distributor you get for that sign. This is the kind of paint. This is the kind of people you hire. This is how many people you on shift. You've done years and years of work of how every crank of the machine works. Mm-hmm. There's a fee associated. That's, you know, going back to the Orange Theory example. That's why they're so goddamn expensive, because they are turnkey. Whereas licenses are essentially figure it the fuck out on your own type scenario.
It has its own benefits, but at the same time, one thing you want to think about is if you're licensing out, which sounds probably if you're sitting here thinking you're dipping your toe into this, licensing is the better option. And I probably would recommend that too. The downfall is, let's say I license Fit Legally to Stu, and he goes and completely really fucks it up. That can devalue my brand of Fit Legally and prevent me from being able to license to other people.
Yeah. And the CrossFitters know that argument 1,000%, because every CrossFit gym will say to me, I do it well. The guy down the street from me that's also a CrossFit is a complete shit show, and people in town, when I tell them I'm CrossFit, they're like, oh, you mean like that one place that tore my grandma's rotator cuff because they told her she needed an overhead squat? And you know, and it just it that, and again, that becomes again the trade-off on this whole thing. Interestingly enough, someone else who spoke at the Iron and Mortar conference where we first met, James Fitzgerald and Jim, if you remember them from OPEX, right? Yep. OPEX is a license model, right? So they educate and certify coaches. And then those coaches can open up an OPEX license. And I had Jim on he just resigned as CEO of OPEX, and he came on the podcast to talk about it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he, you know, it was very interesting for him to talk about the amount of control that they had to let go, but they did have certain things. They could end your license agreement. Like, so they're anti-group class, but and they found out that you were an OPEX and you started group classes, they could go ahead and at the end of the year just not renew your license. And again, what I was talking to him, are we teetering in that gray area? And he's, yes, we are teetering in that. So I want to talk to you about this is, how strict is our government on this? I mean, the is it the FTC? Who regulates the trademark, the franchising law?
So franchising all state specific, and that's why it's hard to speak on this. Like in that situation, I know in one state that would clearly be a franchise just by simply having a licensing agreement. You guys can't see my hands. I'm like air quotes. And I say licensing agreements because that's what they may call it. But once you start putting controls like that of saying you can't do group classes, in Virginia, you'd be teetered already into franchise area. And here's the big distinction, I think, when it comes to oversight stuff. Franchises are extremely heavily regulated by state. There's franchise disclosures you have to make. There's filings you have to do with the state. There's taxes you have to pay. So that's a big, broad difference from licensing. But there's also a big difference in return, right? Like you were talking about earlier, franchising is more of a turnkey style way to grow your brand and grow your business and get other people to buy into you. Licensing is probably going to be a cheaper, at least in the beginning until you really build the brand value, but you're not going to make as much per unit licensing that you would franchising. Like you were saying, licensing more of a volume thing, but oftentimes though, you see that it's also going to depend, you know, where you live. So you need to look and see what are the requirements. And just like I was mentioning earlier, how much oversight do I want to have into this? And all of it's going to play off depending on what your goals are. And you could always start with one and move to the other. Really, the logical one is start with licensing, move to franchising. It's kind of hard to go from franchising back to licensing, but it does happen.
It's interesting. You know, if anyone does any Googling and you look in the franchise, you're going to get hit with a bunch of paid Google ads for law firms that specifically do franchise. And mostly most of them are very smart. They have a great blog article that's the first thing you hit that talks about the difference between franchise and licensing. And as you go through the blog article, they really skew you obviously towards the franchise model because FDD docs, your franchise disclosure documents, I believe it's a 26-point series for the FDDs, somewhere in that 20-ish range. And it costs over $100,000. I mean, depending on what the scale of what you're doing, this could be a very expensive legal process if you decide to go that route. And what I, you know, going back to CrossFit, for all of its flaws in the beginning, the one thing I do appreciate for Greg Glassman, who founded CrossFit, he openly said, I'm not gonna lie, I don't know how to fucking build this business. Like, I have this idea. I think you guys will go run with it. And in like 10 years, let's get together and see who's doing really good. And we'll share best practices because I'm not the guy. But if you're a franchise, people are paying a lot of money to you. You better have every fucking answer to every fucking solution and evolve it over time because you now have a very expensive buy-in and you have an obligation to your franchisees to provide them every solution because they did not buy into this to have a job. They bought a business.
So let's apply that to what's going on with COVID right now. We've seen, I don't know, if any of y'all follow me on Twitter, I rant and rave, and I had all sorts of shit I was saying about PPP and franchises. But one of the things that I stepped back and thought about during COVID was if I'm licensing from Stu, what the fuck, Gym Talk or Urban Movement, I'm not really going to look to him for any support. So my gym shut down, fuck it, I'm not getting anything. But if I'm a franchise, depending upon how our franchise agreement is structured, I might have support from that franchise, from franchise corporate during pandemic and shutdown. And so, you know, that is one of the benefits that there is a bit more, you know, there's more control by the franchise corporate over you if you're the franchisee, but then there's also the two-way support. Like what happens if you start struggling? You know, they can help in restructuring. There are things in franchise agreements that carve out for in the first few years while a new franchise is building, corporate will help supplement that with funds. So, you know, it really depends on how much control you want to have and what you're really expecting from that franchisor or that licensor.
You know, everyone listening, whenever there's two ends of the spectrum here, if we have licensing and franchising on one, everyone's always like, well, what's the thing in the middle, right? Like hot, cold, where's warm, right? Kind of scenario. And this is, at least in this country, it's very strictly those two things. You know, we even played a scenario before this, right? I was saying like, okay, I license Urban Movements. And then on the backside, there is a non-required, strongly motherfucking recommended that you sign up with What the Fuck Gym Talk for business coaching for the first 18 months. Somebody could very easily go ahead and present that and say,
this guy's essentially trying to franchise without having to pay all the franchise fees. His one service is feeding the other. Someone could make that argument in court, 100%. So it's just very interesting to me when you look at scaling a business using OPM and selling your business idea and whatever unique IP that you have and these scaling options. I would ask you, in a world of brick and mortar right now, we've been talking about Orange Theory. These are obviously Orange Theory is on average, the fitness part of the studio is around 1800 square feet and you could have 36 to 50 people in a class.
I know, well, freaking tiny.
Previously, ask me a year ago, and I'm like, that's why they're a cash cow. Their operational capacity is through the roof. Now in COVID world, they're the fucking lepers. And their economic engine doesn't allow them to have 13 people socially distanced because the entire infrastructure is based around volume. So mm-hmm. as you look towards the fitness industry in the future, and where do you think it's going to go? Because do you think facilities, are they going to get bigger to make room for social distancing and people are going to double down on real estate? Or do you think the small guys like Orange Theory, they're still all closed? Like Orange Theories are closed except for you state by state. Like in North Carolina, we're just still closed, but depending on what you're at. And they're going to fold or they're just going to hold out long enough because corporate's going to help bail them out. Where do you see all this?
Well, just as a personal aside, the massage place that I go to has an Orange Theory right on the other side. So it's super relaxing when you're getting massage and you hear that fucking music going. But there, they have the unit. They, I think they bought the building, but they created it so that their business is all next to each other. So obviously one supporting the other. So I could see mine not folding. If there's diversification in situations like that, I think I probably won't see that Orange Theory fold just because it has support by other businesses that they own around it in the same building. Honestly, I don't know. Here, this is one of my things. Like if you had asked me back in February, I'd have been like, fuck it, COVID's not coming. Okay. Then in April, when I'm in the middle of quarantine, it'll fucking be over by July. So frankly, I don't fucking know where we're gonna go. What I do know is, and this is something that I've always looked for the future in my law firm, that Fit Legally, this is what I tell fitness businesses, and we talked about this at the very beginning, is that there needs to be diversification in offerings. So I don't know as far as how the actual structure of brick and mortar is going to work, but I think it's really about diversifying what you offer, whether it is, maybe you're stuck in a lease where you're at, and you can't max out the amount of people, but maybe you can start restructuring more one-on-one. There's plenty of people that are out of work that could come in. You could teach to be a coach and you could oversee, you have online offerings, et cetera. I think the name of the game, like I said, is diversification and pivoting in certain areas, to help sustain when this stuff is going on. I don't know. That's a shit answer, but I don't really know.
But none of us are Nostradamus. We're not trying to predict it. That's not what our professions are all about, but it's always just interesting to kind of hear the different opinions of what everyone's looking at. Another thing I wanted to talk about before we end up, this is really relative. So you're obviously familiar. You're on Twitter. You know that Senor Glassman, Greg Glassman of CrossFit, made some tweets that people got upset at, right? So the PR shit show that was CrossFit, right? CrossFit gets purchased by an individual named Eric Rosa, who did really well in the tech space. And then Berkshire Partners, which is a huge like VC investment firm company. So they purchased CrossFit. And recently this past week, there was this town hall meeting where the new CEO and owner, Eric Rosa, talks to all the CrossFit affiliates. We're talking around 16,000 gyms, and says, there's going to be a lot more support for you guys coming from us. What I want you to speak to is what should maybe a CrossFit affiliate owner be maybe wary of, or just know that, you know, again, Greg Glassman's whole thing was, I don't want to be involved in the business. And his whole thing for not selling years and years ago, because he's been getting offers forever, was that, well, someone's going to come in and try to McDonaldize these guys and tell them they have to buy their equipment from Rogue or they have to do this. So as an affiliate with that original affiliate agreement, what are these potentials? Does maybe CrossFit say, hey, when your agreement's up, there's a new one you got to sign. Don't worry about reading that fine print. Don't worry about that. Just sign. Yeah. So what are some of the things if you're a CrossFit affiliate now and you're under new ownership and you're very excited, you're optimistic about the future? Because honestly, with the whole George Floyd comments and the Me Too shit going on in CrossFit, it was looking dismal for a second. What would you recommend they watch out for?
Well, it also is going to depend on where you're at in building of your individual gym as an affiliate. I probably had like CrossFit 2 weeks. That was back-to-back phone calls with all our CrossFit clients of this exact same question, what you just asked me. And my recommendations range from, okay, you are CrossFit, da-da-da. Well, you already have, you know, maxed out all your athletes that are coming to the box, your gym, you're solid, they're coming back, you're doing all the right COVID things. My recommendation would be, if you don't absolutely need that CrossFit licensing anymore and you're worried about the changes, drop it, rebrand, let's get a trademarking, let's get you going on. However, that's because they know that they could lose. They've already built up under the name and built their clientele. They could drop the name without losing any clients. They've already established themselves and created that structured in business, and they're successful. Then I have other ones who simply signed on within the last few years that are still in the growth phase, and they're afraid because they're still trying that trajectory. They're not filling numbers, and I'm not even talking during COVID. I'm talking before COVID. They were struggling then. That's when we sit down and have a conversation and go, all right, are you okay with these new changes? And you have to understand that you might need to bite the bullet and deal with the changes for a few years as you're in this transitionary growth stage, and changes meaning how much control that CrossFit's going to have, simply because right now you need that CrossFit name in order to build the brand and to get more people into your gym. So my recommendation is going to be, it depends on where you are in your growth process and can you afford to drop it. If you're one of those that's like, yeah, I really am not a fan of the changes. I've had other clients who are like, oh, fuck it. Glassman's gone. I like the changes. I'm going to stay. I don't really need it, but I like being a part of the CrossFit community. And they're happy. And they're happy to pay the licensing amount.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if the licensing amount increases with the edit. Because again, the cost, if they're going to add more business help. And the help could literally be, they hire some guys to make videos and whatever. And you don't have to do these, but here is an entire library and business support suite we provide you. You do not have to implement this. We think these are best practices. Take them or leave them. That's going to cost money. So it'll be interesting to see whether that, you know, that is rolled into the affiliate model right now, and whether the licensing fee goes up. It'll be interesting.
Or if they become a franchise and they just don't call it a franchise.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see. I think this CrossFit move is really good for those individuals who are in the brand. I think some new blood at any time after, you know, after 10, 20 years, it's like, you know, it's good to get some new blood in there. I've just had a lot of people ask about that. Like, so at what point should I be concerned if they're telling me, all right, well, now you need to do this? I'm like, well, that's the whole reason I only pay you $3,000 a year, is because I don't have to follow what you say. I can literally, again, keep this name and run anything I want out of here.
But those people saying that are typically people that are already at a point where they're already seeing profit and consistency.
Yeah.
Majority of people that would be like, oh, I need all of the, you know, I need these new things that CrossFit is going to provide, are probably on that initial upswing and just getting into business on it.
Yeah, they're in the infancy stage still. And that's, I think that's most of the gyms that thought about leaving or it did de-affiliate. And obviously, you were busy during then. I was very, very busy during that time with the whole rebranding stuff. And it's just interesting to think about now, if we have a CrossFit model that becomes a more strict license, again, is there, you know, people going to call them out? Are they going to have to go franchise? Or are they going to keep everything lax as is, but here is a lot of money, effort, and solutions available to you, not forced upon you? Rach, it is always a blast jamming with you. What, if anyone here wants to get in contact with you, it's a very easy process. You're very, very social on social media. You were there constantly. How can people get in contact if they have questions either on this whole license versus, you know, franchising thing, or they want to talk about their IP, their brand marks, mm-hmm. things that they want to protect, or they do to like, I've got it, Stu, I'm going to license. I need to go make sure I legally actually own all of this. How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, so before I get into that, also, if you get to the crossroads and you're trying to determine what you want to do with the changes in the CrossFit agreements, we work through that, as you see. I don't just approach it from a legal standpoint. I'm looking at it from a business strategy standpoint. I'm all about business planning and what can we do in the, you know, short term, long term, et cetera. So if you guys want that, you can reach out to me at fitlegally.com. It's fitlegally on all the socials as well, or else just Rachel Brinke. Fitlegally is the easiest. But yeah, just shoot us a message. Let us know what you need. We'll try to get you resources. We can try to get you and me on a phone call together. Just, I think the biggest takeaways from today's talk is make sure that you have your liability protection with COVID, checking to make sure your brand is protected. And if you're an affiliate, start thinking about what you want to do when the changes come down the pipeline. Because if your licensing is running out and you're having to change a new one, you have to move quickly to rebrand. And so that's something that can't necessarily happen overnight. You might have to make changes. And so forward think, don't wait until the shoe drops and then try to get all that shit taken care of.
Be proactive, fuckers, not reactive. Very good. Awesome. Rach, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.